Hi, everybody. This is Into the Dark. The show that brings you to every witchy where and when you've ever wondered about. We've got a great show for you today. It's real big. We're going to be answering your reader questions about using Ouija boards in space and about magical self-defense. And we've got my interview with someone who made occult stained glass. It's a huge, huge show. I'm so glad you're here. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is probably the best choice you'll make all day. I'll see you guys again at the back end of the theme music. And in the meantime, stick around for the rest of Into the Dark.
Skeptic among believers, and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around!
They're not always
evil. The often erotic world of the witch.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing deep down, of course.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Into the Dark, where we're going to talk about all sorts of exciting witchy things. And we've got a huge, huge show for you today. I am so excited. From the tip of my pointy hat to the bottom of my witch-themed boots. Let's say they're made of pewter somehow. And we really should just get started. But there are a couple announcements I want to make because there's a lot of cool stuff going on behind the scenes right now at Into the Dark that you should check out. So in addition to the things we're doing today, I'm starting to line up some really cool interviews coming up for later episodes. So check us out next month for my interview with a practitioner of sex magic so you can learn what sex magic is, how to do it, or how to have it done to you. And also I'll be talking to somebody from the Family Wiccan Temple here in New York City. Also really exciting, Yesterday, I went to the Witchcraft Festival here in New York City. And there are a lot of the people you expect there to be: witches, warlocks, Wiccans, followers of Aleister Crowley. But there are also a number of people who just had a wonderful time being in a space that was encouraging and wonderful. I'm talking about goth kids. I'm talking crust punks, metalheads, renfarers, edge lords. I think I saw a standard punk who was probably somewhere in his 70s. And there were also a lot of Christian protesters who added an air of excitement to the whole thing and a lot of belly dancers. And so I recorded a lot of what happened there and a lot of interviews I did with people on the scene. And so I'm going to edit that up and release that as an extra podcast-only extrasode. So check out our Audio Boom site later on for that, because that's really exciting. But we've got a ton of show right now. A lot of you sent in questions, and I'm so excited. I'm so thankful. I'm ready to get to those super fast. One thing about that, though, is that we've sent so many questions. You are so eager that I'm not going to be able to answer all of them on this episode. So if your question doesn't get answered today, sit tight, and I'm going to answer it on a later episode, or I'll just email you directly if there's no time for this on one of the shows, because we are a resource for our listeners, and we want our listeners to get the information they need about witches, warlocks, and all sorts of related wonderful things. And so email us and you will get an answer. And that email address is intothedarkrfb, R as in radio, F as in free, and B as in Brooklyn, Radio Free Brooklyn, or intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. You can also tweet at me at Cooper Wilhelm, or, you know, follow me on Instagram. I don't know. I don't know how you communicate on that. I've only had it for about a month. But if there's a way, you should use it to talk to me and send me your questions about witches, warlocks, vampires, ghosts, that sort of wonderful thing. So it's time for our first question. In the question portion of the episode, Dear Into the Dark, how can I develop telekinetic powers? I'm so glad somebody asked this question. Now, telekinesis is the ability to move things using only your mind. And there are a number of ways you can build up this skill, but the key word here is practice. You're not going to get it the first time, and that's all right. A good resource for someone trying to develop their telekinetic powers is Liber Null by Peter J. Carroll, one of the fathers of modern chaos magic. And in that, he suggests that you develop the skill of lucid dreaming. So lucid dreaming is when, in the midst of a dream you're having while you're asleep, you realize you're having a dream, and then you use that knowledge to direct the course of the dream. It's a fine balance, because you need to know you're dreaming, but not be so alert that you wake up. So if you want to develop your telekinetic powers in the midst of a dream, try to imagine yourself in an area that is not your bedroom, that you know very well, your kitchen, where you work, maybe the local grocery store where you buy your produce. And try to be there as thoroughly as possible. And then try to move objects in that space. Do this night after night after night, and the next morning always check and see if the object you moved during your lucid dreaming experience was moved in material reality. If you successfully do this, or even if you don't, email us at intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. Tell us of your progress. Also, there are certain foods that might be helpful in this: bay leaves, lemongrass. And if you take dandelion root and you roast it, and you grind it up and you brew it like coffee, that should also be very helpful in helping you develop your latent telekinetic powers. Thank you so much for that question. So our next question for Into the Dark goes on to a much heavier subject. This is going to get a bit heavy, and I'm really glad that someone sent in this question, because it is important. This is something you should know about. But because it's so dark, we're going to tread a little lightly now. So the next question is about what to do if you think you have been the victim of a magical attack. This is a real thing. This can't happen to you. Dear Into the Dark, if you refuse to believe in sorcery, can it affect you? In other words, is denial an effective way to avoid spells? Now, the short answer to that is no. But there are many options you can pursue if you think that you are the victim of a magical attack. First and foremost, easy peasy. Just like, you know, burn some sage. Burning sage where you live, that actually can be super helpful. I know somebody who was told by a gypsy that he was cursed 2 years ago, and the curse took the form of him losing his job, losing his girlfriend, losing his apartment. It was a real bad scene. He burned some sage. Eh, it was fine after that. But sometimes that's not enough. And when that's not enough, you should consider finding a local witch, wizard, shaman, magic doctor, try to help you out. And if that doesn't work, there are some things you can do on your own. Now, it's very helpful to know who's actually attacking you magically. And once you've identified the person who's coming after you, what you need to do is sit down and picture as closely, as hard as you can, a ray of light coming out of your body, a line, a string of luminescence leading between you and the person who is linked to you and attacking you. Then once you've found this, which is usually coming out of your solar plexus, what you need to do is picture a magic weapon in your mind. Hold this image in your mind really hard, a magic sword maybe, and have that cut every strand of that luminescent link between you and your tormentor. Once you've severed that connection, call up the image of a magic torch. The guide I've been using for this says you should have the torch blessed by holy fire or the Holy Spirit. That's up to you. But have that torch cauterize the stub of that magic link coming out of your body such that it falls off. Then, once you've severed that connection completely, avoid all contact with your attacker. Don't see them. Don't talk to them. Don't respond to their text messages. Don't read their text messages. Block them on your phone. I think that's a thing you can do. I've had a smartphone for a month, so I'm not sure what's actually possible with that. Don't read the emails. Can you block emails? I don't know. Find out how. And do that. So, if you think you're being the victim of an attack, you might want to pick up, so the guide I've been using for this is Psychic Self-Defense by Dion Fortuna. This is one of the go-to old references on fending off magical attacks, and it was notably used by none other than David Bowie when he thought he was being attacked by Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin. He also thought a number of witches were trying to make a homunculus out of him, and I think he used it in those events as well. So that can be a great resource for you. Psychic Self-Defense by Dion Fortuna. It's a bit dated. There is some racism in there. But some of the magic still holds up. But of course, that's if you know who's attacking you. If you don't know who's attacking you, you might need something more general. So I found this spell that evokes Hawaiian gods. That may be of some use. So if you think you're being attacked, want you to light a candle, look at that candle, and over that candle flame, say the following chant about yourself. Get some friends to help you. Have them say it about you, too. And the chant goes like this. Oh, great Cain and Ku, come near and listen to our plea to you. Person's name. Needs protection from curses and chants of an evil kind, and calls on you to protect him, her, from such evil. Oh, Amakua of the forests and the skies and the seas, draw near and lend your power of protection against curses and spells of all kinds. Bring your influence here and circle around, person's name, to protect him, her, from evil and the work of bad spirits. So, this should be enough for you at least to get started. There's also a lot of information about this on the internet. But, you know, if all else fails, just burn sage. Okay. Thank you so much for submitting that question. That felt so dark and so draining. So just to, like, for my own personal help, we're gonna turn on now to a lighter subject and a lighter mood for our program. So this next question. Oh God, I feel better already. Dear Into the Dark, can you use a Ouija board in space? This is a really great question. Are there ghosts in space? This is really what we're asking. And there is a band called Space is Haunted. They're not that great, but they do exist and have a wonderful name. So I've done some research on the possibility, and the thing is, like, you have to, like, do Ouija boards work with beings who are close to space? And apparently someone who died ascending Mount Everest contacted some Ouija board users in a farm in Cornwall. So if you're close to space, you should still be able to communicate. And there may be ghosts in space. Our own American astronaut hero, John Glenn, told Life magazine in 1962 that he thought he saw things that we now can interpret possibly as having been ghosts as he re-entered Earth's atmosphere. He told them, quote, "They're spread out as far as I could see were literally thousands of tiny luminous objects that glowed in the black sky like fireflies. I was riding slowly through them, and the sensation was like walking backwards through a pasture where someone had waved a wand and made all the fireflies stop right where they were and glow steadily." He went on to say later, "I felt certain they were not caused by anything emanating from the capsule. As far as I know, the true identity of these particles is still a mystery." Now straight from the mouth of John Glenn. You can't trust an American hero like John Glenn. Who can you trust? Though, we should say that there have been 6 reported cases of people dying in space. So if you go into space, these may be the people you talk to. And the thing is, 3 of those people who died in space spoke Russian because they were part of the Soviet space program. And those people are Georgi Dobrovsky, Vladislav Volkov, and Viktor Petsayev. So if you try to talk to ghosts in space with a Ouija board, bring a Cyrillic Ouija board and someone who can speak Russian, because the ghosts will be talking to you, presumably in that language. But that's only 3 of the reported deaths in space. The other 3 reported deaths were the deaths of Soviet space dogs in space. So if you go into space, it does seem like there might be a 50-50 chance you'll talk to one of these cosmonauts, but you might also talk to Laika, Mushka, or Chokka, one of the 3 dogs who died in space. So be ready for your Cyrillic Ouija board to be barking at you. And incidentally, the Russian onomatopoetic way of referring to the bark of a dog is guff, guff. So if you see guff, guff, when you're up there in space, if you have the resources. I don't know if commercial space travel is going to become more popular soon. I hope it does, because I'd love to go to space, ghosts or no. Okay, so we have time for one more question. And that question is, how important is ritual? And this is a point of contention for a lot of people, because a number of magical systems believe that the ritual itself has some efficacy and some potency. When you praise the earth responds in kind. Though those with a chaos magic background, such as Peter Carroll, whose book Liber Null you should check out, would say that the point of the ritual is more to get you in the right mood to unlock the subconscious and superconscious parts of yourself that make magic real and make magic possible. So if you want to find the right ritual for magic, make sure it's the right ritual for you. Thank you so much for all those questions. So if you have any occult questions, any questions about witchcraft, magic, or the unexplained, or ghosts, or space, let's open up to space. Send those to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com or tweet those to me @CooperWilhelm. And our research department will do its very darndest to get you some good answers. So mote it be. All right. So I'm really excited now to bring you an interview I did with Edward at Riven Barrow Glass. Riven Barrow Glass has been producing occult-themed stained glass for, I think, several years now. You can follow them on Instagram. That's how I found them. And I went to Edward's studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and talked to Edward about her process and what inspires her. So we got into some chat about divination, about having your own rituals, your own spiritual beliefs, and also just about the process of making stained glass, about which I knew very little, which is weird because my sister does it and I still don't really know how it works. Well, I do now because I talked to her for a long time. So here's that interview. I hope you enjoy. I'm here in the studio of Riven Barrow Glass with Edward, who makes a lot of beautiful and vaguely occult magic-y themed stained glass, which is available for sale, yeah?
Yes.
Fantastic. Actually, just get this out of the way. If someone wanted to buy this, where would they do? Where would they go? What would they do?
You can look up Riven Barrow Glass on Etsy.
Okay.
I also have an Instagram, and same, Riven Barrow Glass, if you just want to see, like, more than what I have for sale at the moment.
Yeah. You should actually follow them. I do already, and it's great, and it's pretty, and it makes me happy because it's basically that and tattoo parlors and, like, rare book collections because I'm a nerd.
Yeah, those are good. I do follow some of those.
They are so good.
Yeah.
Tell me about this piece you're working on right now, because we got, we got a skull on a book, and the book has a pentagram on it. Where did this come from? Like, was it just like an idea you had in a dream, maybe? Not to push it too hard.
This is actually a commission for some sisters that I've known for a long time. They live in California, but you said your first episode was about tarot.
Totally.
One of them did Pizza Witch, if you ever heard of it.
No.
It's a tarot that's just image-based. It's very, you know, well, it's called Pizza Witch, so you can...
Does she make pizzas appear? Because that would be the best of magic powers.
I think that she would be really excited if she did, but okay. You're just going to have to settle for the tarot.
Fair enough.
And then her and her sister, I don't know what exactly their writing relationship is, but they just were one of the the winners of the Shudder Horror Screenplay contest, and they got to go and work on their screenplay at the Stanley, where...
So were those murders Stephen happened?
King, where Stephen King wrote The Shining.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, I'm sure there were murders. I mean, there were definitely film murders, but...
I was thinking if there's a hotel in LA that's famous for, like, all the suicides and murders that have happened there. Like, they would just find...
Yeah.
They're, like, weird ones, too. Like, they found a woman in the water tower.
That one.
And
yeah,
it was, like,
one's...
locked, and they're like, it's a suicide. I'm like, how did you... But it's locked from the outside.
Yeah. That one was really creepy. Especially because all the tenants of the building were drinking the water for 2 weeks.
That is horrifying.
Yeah, that little bit of just making it feel real, bringing it home.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah. That's going to haunt my nightmares. Back to the glass. Let's
go
back to
Would you like some water?
not yet, but I really appreciate how apropos that was. Okay, so this is a commission from the sisters.
Yeah, and they're doing, I don't know exactly, like, this isn't, like, for anything in particular, but... Their film that they're working on is called Love Spell.
Okay.
And it's about a teenage witch that she does a love spell. I'm not actually sure I have not read the script.
Fair. I mean, spoilers and all that, too.
Yeah, I don't want to give it away, so that's everything I know.
But if you listen to the last episode, you'll know how gross love spells can be. Check it out.
Yeah, so, well, it is a horror screenplay, so I'm sure that, you know, but, they contacted me and they wanted, I feel like this was just, I mean, this is kind of their vibe, but this was also the mood they were in. They're like, we love your skulls that you make, and we want some skulls, bats or snakes and something. And I'm like, you know, I know them. So I thought about it and then I came up with this, kind of like be like a nod to maybe their future grimoire, like as they go down this path. And you know, they signed off, they love it, and I'm making it for them, and I don't know, like, we'll put it in their window, be inspired by it, hopefully.
I mean, you know, every day the rays of the sun will shine in, casting the
beautiful light of the skull. Mm-hmm. And it's grimoire. So when you started, did this start with you doing other things in stained glass, then sort of moving into these sorts of topics, or did it start with the topics and then eventually like come into stained glass?
Well, I mean, the first thing I made was a bat, so.
Okay. Like, there are a ton of bats in here, which you can't see because it's the radio, but there are at least half a dozen and they're gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, this is where my interests are, and I've switched mediums several times. I've done art my whole life, and so I feel like the most successful art is you have to be as true to yourself as possible, or else you're just going to make something watered down. And I kind of figured, like, you know, no one's beaten down the door and asking me for stuff, so I can pretty much do whatever I want and see if people like it.
That's kind of like the ultimate freedom.
Like, I didn't know if, like, it was, you know, anyone would ever buy any or it would be successful, but I wanted to get back into, like, fine art, you know, like, instead of being paid to do other people's stuff.
What were you doing before you got back into
this? I was working in film, doing like sets and props in San Francisco.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's great because you get all these challenges and you make all this stuff and that's really cool, but you never get to really, everything has to be made on the fly. You know, you don't, you know, whatever, you have to get everything right the first time. There's usually, I mean, I wasn't working on like Harry Potter. We're not talking about like a year and a half of pre-production. We're talking like a month.
Okay.
So it's really just like, what do you need? Okay, here we go. And so it's tactile, satisfying, but not spiritually.
Okay, I take that. How long does one of these take? Like a normal piece, given that, like, because I mean, like, you can sort of take as long as you want with it, right? For the most part, I mean, unless it's commissioned like this one.
Yeah. I could. I just don't have the space to take us like to let something like I spend a lot of time in the drawing portion of it, like figuring out what I'm gonna do, and then I just make it because it. As you see, this is, like, just a section of my apartment, and so I don't have, like, the luxury to have, like, oh, well, I have tables over there where pieces are just sort of in the works. Like,
right.
I actually have a system of trays, which you can see stacked, and that's, because I have to move everything, like, it's just this table, like, stations, and so, I get that question a lot, how long does something take? I can't really say, because to the best of my ability, I make things in batches.
Okay.
Well, I do steps in batches.
So, like, how many pieces are you working on right now?
I'm working on making 10 bats, 2 serpents, this commission, the sequel to that large piece, and a couple other, like, small commissions.
Wow. That's, like...
So...
That's a ton. That's...
It is a little... yeah, like, it's a...
You're really busy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I always celebrate people who are very busy. That's great. So this is where the art feels natural. This is sort of the spiritual fulfillment. But do you do things outside of the art that sort of connect in with, I don't know, grimoires, bats,
yeah,
serpents?
I mean,
are there skulls here? Do you have like a model skull that you use?
Yeah, I have that glow-in-the-dark plastic skull on that shelf.
That's
my partner's. That's, you know, for his inspiration. It blinks purple-eyed skull.
It's so misfits. I love it.
Yeah. But I have, like, that, I don't know, that plastic glow-in-the-dark skull, and I have lots of little skeleton stuff. I've moved a few times over the last few years, so I just keep paring down what I have. Forcibly, you know.
So, okay, so you've got the skulls, but, like, do you also, I mean, so there's a tarot deck on the bookcase. How often do you do tarot or, like, seek out divinatory inspiration?
I've been exploring divination a lot lately,
okay.
Going to lectures at, like, Tarot Society and some at Morbid Anatomy. I don't know if you're familiar with Al Cummins, but he's amazing.
Tell me about Al Cummins.
He did, I don't know, he's just super smart, and he's done, like, his PhD on divination in the Elizabethan era.
So it's kind of like a doctor of the dark arts.
Kind of, yeah. And he's... I don't know, he's really nice too, so I've gone to a bunch of his lectures and learned a lot, and I've been taking classes. Like, I took an intro to tarot at Catland, because I've been doing tarot since I was, like, in high school, but I never talked to anybody about it, so I kind of felt like I'd gotten to a place where it was, like, this fantasy thing that I did that I didn't really have grounded in the history of it, or, like, how to do it properly, and those classes were really cool. it made me much more confident in, you know, the emphasis was on using your intuition. And so, you know, I have like, I guess I have like 3 tarot decks now, but I have, you know, Miss Cleo's.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those at Catland, and they make really... Is she still... Do we know if she's still active? Is she still operational?
I don't know. I wanted to look it up, because I bought that off a friend of mine, but, I don't know. I used it, like, right after I bought it, and, you know, I felt like it gave me a really good response.
I mean, she's just full of positive energy.
Yeah.
Do the cards...
The cards are
all...
Are
they just, like, versions of... Are they just, like, her... as like the Fool and the Empress and the Hierophant, or like
that would be amazing, but it's just all Egyptian themed.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, those are fantastic. Those are like all the illustrations from like a children's version of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
They're tarot cards. That is so very cool. Have you been doing any divination outside of tarot?
I don't know if this is divination, but for a month, any decision that I made that I was sort of waffling on, mm-hmm. like it was, you know, inconsequential stuff, kind of like, should I go out tonight? Like, should I actually get off my ass and go to that thing I should go to?
Right.
A long time ago, I took the thing inside the eight ball,
yeah.
like the answer ball, whatever.
Yeah,
it's like D&D. Like,
yeah, it's like a 6-sided die kind of.
Yeah, I think it's like 14-sided. I would just roll it. And see what it said, and whatever it said, I would do.
That is fantastic.
So, it's funny because, okay, when I wrote down all the possibilities of what answers it would have,
mm-hmm.
and it really falls down, like, for the most part, like a 50% are yes, 25% are no, and then 25% are ask again later, vague reply, or things like that.
So they're like, the same option will appear on like different sides. Of the die?
No, it's all... Every single side is a different answer.
Okay.
You would think that I would kind of get, like, 50% yes, and then 50% a sort of no, or a
yeah.
kind of, you know, try again. But I actually got yes pretty much, like, 80% of the time, which I ended up having to do a lot of stuff.
So you always observed the will of the
Yeah. I wanted to... I don't know. I felt like... I feel like, as a person, you know, you fall into... patterns.
Yeah.
And I wanted to break myself out of it by... See, it's like, I don't know whether to say it's the element of chance or whether I was, you know, because I was concentrating when I was doing it,
yeah.
if there was some other force at work.
I mean, there are certainly a number of magical traditions where those two things are basically the same anyway, where you just sort of, you let your will or the will of the universe be displayed or manifest through a chance
mm-hmm.
operation, which I am indicating by doing this really intense hand gesture that is a...
It's
no,
kind of like you're bowling.
It is kind of like I'm bowling. It's like you're bowling the universe, and
yeah.
you're seeing what the universe will knock down in your life. Yeah, so, I mean, that's... Okay, do you still do the... It's not like an eight ball anymore. What would you call this? Like your D&D, your amphibious dice?
It's like I don't know what I'd call it.
Also,
like,
what is in that ball? Is it just water with dye?
Yeah, the thing itself is plastic. It's real thin. It's plastic and it's white. Like, even the letters are white. Like, it's actually kind of hard to read.
Okay.
And then the liquid is like, I don't know, ultraviolet purple or something.
I've actually never used a magic eight ball under a black light, and now I really, really want to.
Yeah, I assume it glows. Yeah, I figure.
Oh my gosh. Okay, that's homework for after this interview. And I'm going to... try that at home once I manage to buy a magic eight ball and then smash it open and then lose the deposit on my department by staining the floor with that. And that's gonna be... That's gonna
well, I mean, you could just use the eight ball. I just... When I was young, like, it had dehydrated, I guess. So I don't know how the water inside evaporated, and I was really mad because I liked it. So I used, like, the dullest nail file in the world because I was, like, 12, and I got it out.
That's...
kind of like extracting its soul or something.
You stole its soul.
I did. It's from, I don't know.
I think
now
you might
I feel
be,
bad.
I think you might be the first dark wizard I've interviewed on this show because you stole the soul of an eight ball. Well, it's also because, like, the fact that it, like, lost its water was almost like the universe telling you, like, take it out.
Yeah.
Because
it doesn't work. You'd have to, I mean, you can hold it above your head, but it just doesn't work. It just
yeah.
rolls around in there.
And it's just like a terrible, I assume it's a terrible sound, that thing just rattling
yeah.
in there. It's like something you'd use to frighten a cat away.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. Super glad I asked that question. Do you ever feel like there's a ritual aspect to what you're doing here? Because, I mean, I assume you're getting into, like, really intense concentration.
Yes.
As you do this. So, like, do you find that you can sort of feel this reflected in other aspects of your life? Besides the sort of basic, like, this is the art I do. This is how I live my life as a true being of soul and goodness in the world. So, of course, I'm going to just radiate that out into everything. These are very leading questions. Dan Rather would be so disgusted with me right now.
I do feel like it has had the unexpected effect. Oh, a couple things. Like, one, it's made me work harder at meditation. It's one of those things that I always, oh, I'm going to do that. I really need to do that. Like, yeah. I have a brain that likes to think five things at once. Mm. And I, like, when you're scoring and cutting glass and trying to do complicated cuts, you need to be really focused. And you need to be thinking about pressure. And you need to be thinking about, like, the design that you did and like the best way to cut it out of the piece of glass, and then you also have to listen for the crack. And so if somebody walked into the room and was like, hey, I would totally jump. Like, so it's made me, I guess, more mindful, and that's cool.
When you meditate, do you, like, what process do you do? What are the mechanics of that when you meditate? Because I know there are, like, a lot of ways people do that, and it can be a big...
I'm terrible at meditating. I actually... What was supposed to be me meditating has become me, like, I don't know the term for this, I should, but I do, like, I guess lucid dreaming, like, instead, like, is that what you'd call it? Like, I sit down and I get really calm, and then I try to project myself into a reality of my own making. So that's what I do instead. When I was supposed to be clearing my mind of thought, instead I will build elaborate worlds.
So is it you in those worlds, or just sort of the world taking shape, like, in front of you?
I mean, I'm the protagonist, but, like, it's not me per se. Like, I guess I use it as a method for me to... I don't have to be me, depending on my mood.
Is it usually the same protagonist version of you in the same world, or is it sort of, like, different every time?
It's not different every time. It's more like there's, like, it's slowly changed. It's not like a choose-your-own-adventure. It's more just like, for 6 months, it was all kind of this theme. And then it slowly changed into 6 months of this kind of theme. Yeah, I don't exactly know. I do know that it stimulates my brain and it makes me more creative.
Do you find that the work you're doing with the glass or with other media, does that have a sort of, like, direct relationship in any way to the things you're seeing in these lucid meditation dreams at all?
I suppose, yeah. I can't say that...
It's okay if the answer is no, too.
No, I mean, it would. I just haven't made anything from them yet.
Okay.
But I would.
Do you see them ever in the dreams? Or the meditations?
I've seen stained glass windows in the dreams.
Ones you've made, or just, like...
Ones I've... No, but I... Actually, yeah, I made that one.
Okay, so right now she's pointing at a huge stained glass piece of a... I mean, how would you describe this? So it's like a skull in flames, and then there's a scroll at the bottom?
Yeah. It's basically kind of like a what you'd imagine... what I imagine a campfire to be, except...
Okay.
So it's the fire, and then it's two crossed pieces of wood, except the pieces of wood are vaguely bone-shaped, and then the skull is in the flames above it. And then there's smoke and snakes in the smoke, and then the scroll at the bottom.
What does the scroll say?
Okay, I don't know. Like, I do not speak Latin aloud.
Fair enough.
So, tertium non detur. There is no third. It's like a rule of logic. I kind of sort of twisted the meaning for my own purpose to be about, like, that piece is about resurrection of the spirit through fire. And so the way that I'm interpreting there is no third, it's like kind of like, it's sort of vampiric and, like, you know, neither living nor dead.
That would be the third.
Is there the other? Who could be one living, two dead.
Okay, and there is no third state, which a vampire would be.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, got it. Okay.
It's not supposed to, I mean, it's totally a vampire, but, like, that wasn't... That wasn't, like, where the idea came from. There's more to it than that. I'm making a series of these.
Are you not gonna make a... sorry, never mind. That was gonna be a terrible joke. yeah, okay, so you're making a series of these. Go
yeah.
on.
It's gonna be a series of four, each one of the elements, and then it's gonna be about the journey of, a person from death till they are separated from their body.
Okay, so like the transition from from like death to like
it's supposed to be like there's a whole lot to it. It's supposed to be the stained glass windows for an occult society, and these are their tenants, I guess.
Okay, so you're like kind of like creating a society as you go.
Yeah.
Of a society of one.
All these people in my head.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
I mean, I've written a lot of it down, but like whatever. Like I'm not just like making another reality. Like,
are you going to at all disseminate this?
If I ever finish it.
Because like, I'm sure you could actually build a community out of these tenants if they're good tenants. Not to presume. I don't.
Yeah.
Who knows what'll.
I mean, I guess like I don't know like this. I've become very focused on the craftsmanship side of the stained glass for a while, but really, like, the reason that I got into stained glass is because of its spiritual history, the way it used to, like, amaze people, like, when it was initially put into Gothic cathedrals. Like, I can't even imagine what it would be like to have been a peasant.
Yeah.
And to go into this place and to see these illuminated images and, like, how moving that would be, and that, I mean, it would have made me religious. I am not interested in any religion that exists currently. I'm more personally about my rituals and traditions and things that are meaningful to me. I like to create, like, in the past I've, like, done things like created paintings of my own saints. And it's, like, a thing that, you know, I've seen a lot around, like, the last few years. But, you know, like, I don't tend to follow anyone's rules, but I am really interested in learning about different practices and things that have worked for other people.
When you say your own saints, are these figures you're kind of creating out of whole cloth, or are they like people who do sort of exist in our consensus reality, and you're beatifying them into sainthood?
Well, I mean, like, yeah, like this is a long time ago, and it was pretty much people that inspire an aspect of something in me. I want to be confident when I say this, but I understand that this will sound silly. Like, Xena Warrior Princess was a big deal to me.
I think Xena Warrior Princess was a big deal to a lot of people and inspired a lot of confidence in a lot of people.
So, yeah, like, you know, kind of like, you know, somebody that had a past, like, obviously it's fictional, but somebody that had a past that, like, you know, changed that path, and then, you know, if I ever don't want to exercise or something, it'd be like, Xena would do it.
Yeah, like you'd invoke Saint Xena.
Like, to motivate and to make me feel stronger.
Saint Xena of the Flying Chakra.
Yeah.
Are these saint... Did you make sort of, like icons of these saints? Are they sort of, like...
I did a very, very long time ago. I don't have any of that stuff anymore. I do have a little altar kind of above, like, where I have, like, my grinder and stuff. And there's, like, Xena. And there's actually it's a 20-sided die. I'm slowly trying to build up little things to put up there that are meaningful. You know, I don't know. I guess, you know, whatever. I feel like pop culture has a much... You have glasses on all of a sudden.
Oh, I wanted to see your altar. I'm sorry. I'm not good at things that are far away.
Oh, okay. You know, I don't know. Pop culture plays, like, a pretty strong role in everyone's lives now. And it, like, I feel like it can feel a little silly, but also it's, like, very genuine. And so, you know, I also have Star Trek over here. I have Make It So. And it, like, when I... Because grinding is a... it, like, can hurt the hands. It's kind of boring. I don't like doing it.
How do you actually... I feel it's sort of strange we've been talking about this for, like, 20 minutes, and we've actually not gotten into the mechanics of actually making stained glass. Like, is it, like, do you do it by hand with, like, a tool? Is there, like, a machine you're putting the glass into?
Oh, okay, so you buy sheets of glass, of art glass. Okay. There's two methods of stained glass. There's the medieval method, which is, you know, churches, all that history. And then there's the Tiffany method. Tiffany's the jeweler, Tiffany's the lamp. It's like, it's called art glass, and you can buy from glass manufacturers, whatever, different colors, different textures. You know, it's limited, but there's a fairly large range. And you do your design, and there's rules to what kind of design you can make, like, that'll work. Because, like, there's just certain shapes you can't cut out of glass. It'll break or whatever. Anyway, you do your design, and then you score it with a little carbide wheel, and then you break it with pliers, basically, carefully, and then it'll have little rough edges, which, if I were doing the medieval method, wouldn't really matter, but because I do the Tiffany method, I grind them down in this grinder, so it's basically I just go through and I take off little fragments that are still attached, or, you know, and then I wrap the pieces in thin strips of copper foil, that adhesive copper foil that sticks to them, and I burnish it. And then I use flux to conduct, what is it, to cook the heat? So you put it together.
Yeah.
You hold it together with pins. You go down the copper lines with flux, and then you solder it.
Oh, okay.
And then afterwards you wash it, and then you can patina it if you want, and then you wax it, and then it's done.
Patina. What is that, like, causing the solder to erode a bit? Or not erode, corrode a bit? Or?
No, it's just a reaction with the metals in the solder. Like, it's just a chemical reaction. Okay. You can get different kinds. I only use black, you know.
It's very metal. I approve.
You can get like copper. I mean, it's not like there's like a ton of stuff, but yeah. The black is supposed to mimic the medieval method, which is lead cane.
Right. Okay, you don't use lead anymore.
You do.
Or is solder made of lead?
It has lead in it.
Oh, okay.
It's like 60-40 lead tin?
Not to be a downer, but what are the odds that you're slowly poisoning yourself by working in this medium?
Well, I've looked into it a lot. I mean, like I said, like, I've worked in a lot of mediums, and I feel like I was much worse off when I used to work in spray paint.
That can be harsh.
Or printmakers can use gasoline, things like that. Like, there's a heavy fume contingent in art, you know? Like, yeah. I don't know. Well, as far as glass people, Dale Chihuly lost an eye, so...
Oh, did he lose that in some sort of... I always assumed that was completely unrelated to the art.
Now I don't... I just always assumed it was a glass thing, like...
I mean, that makes perfect sense, because glass is sharp, and I assume it also... Like, it'd fly. Do you wear like, safety goggles when you do this?
Yeah. I mean, I can. It depends on which. Like, I have different safety precautions that I take for each step.
Okay.
When I solder, I wear a respirator, and I open a window. A lot of glass people don't. It seems like I don't know a lot of glass people personally. I know most of them online, but it seems like a lot of an older generation don't take these precautions.
Yeah,
and they seem okay, but I personally, like, I do, like, I don't want the fumes. And it's not, from what I understand, lead does not vaporize until 900 degrees, and I work at the hottest at 700 degrees.
Okay,
so. The fumes, there are fumes, but they're fumes from the flux, so I don't know what that's doing, but it's not lead, so...
Okay, that should be... So if people commission something from you, they can do so with the knowledge that they are not giving you a financial incentive to subject yourself to dangerous working conditions and potential permanent poisoning.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really safe, but at the same time, I just like doing it, and... I mean, there's lots of ways that we're killing ourselves. I feel like I should worry more about processed foods than, like, making art.
You gotta die of something. Which is something I need to stop saying as much out loud. And, especially not in front of kids. Let's get back to spirituality and such for a sec. You talked about how this is sort of relating to the history of religion, and, like, people would go into Gothic churches and they would see these and they'd have a religious experience. Are you... hoping to generate that same sort of experience in people or in other people with your work, or
sort of? I mean, I know that looking at the glass has a calming effect, depending on the pieces. Like, it's like it sort of ties back into the meditation thing. When you look at it illuminated, the best way to, you know, see glass is in person, and as you move, it moves, and it subtly changes color, and different daylight makes it look differently.
Yeah.
And if it's an image you like and you enjoy looking at it, then I imagine that it would calm you, and it would make you, you know, like, feel a little bit relaxed or dreamy or something.
Yeah.
I also make these beveled pyramids. They're not actually technical pyramids because they're three-sided, but they're in the shape of pyramids, and they, you know, work like prisms, and they create rainbows and stuff. And I actually was reading something that was talking about when you look at, I can't remember if it was specifically things like this, but like things in the window, things subtly swaying, like creating like refracted light, stuff like that. It will actually, it's like therapy for the brain. Also, like, I read that and I forgot about it, and then I started making these and I would put them in my window, and there was a while where I was like, I was doing this and like I didn't know anyone yet. No one was buying it yet, and so I was like in this place where I was like, oh, like I'm spending this money, and like I don't know if this is worth it, and like, oh, what am I doing? Like, I love making it, but like, how long is this sustainable? Yeah. And like, I would just like find myself spacing out, and I would drift unconsciously to the prisms, and I would watch them, and I'd be like, I feel better. So I don't know, it works. I mean, like, okay, so you asked, like, as far as like religious experience for people, though, like,
yeah.
That would really have to be like based on them, like,
right.
If this commission, like, if the sisters look at this and they feel some sort of like spiritual, I don't know, passion, like looking at it, like, awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that would sort of be on them and like their rituals, what they do, like,
right.
How they might just let, I don't know. I mean, isn't all art sort of spiritual? Like, just looking at it, like...
I mean, I think art is a religion for a lot of people.
Yeah.
When you pick colors for a piece, is it primarily sort of what would work for the piece as an image? Or do you take some consideration into, like, the effects that, say, prisms will have or colors will have?
Yeah.
On
I mean,
you
I,
or on...
Yeah, colors? No, because the other thing that's tricky about glass is, like, you can see the glass I selected for the book right here that's cut.
Yeah.
It looks, like, black almost on the table. When you hold it up to the light,
whoa.
It's actually like a really deep teal.
Yeah.
So I try to make it... This piece is very dark, but when it's not illuminated, I try to...
And when it is, it's still fairly dark thematically.
Yeah, thematically. Depending on how you view.
I mean, that's called fangs, right?
Yeah.
Solid. That is fantastic.
Yeah. I do. Like, I put a lot of thought into the color selection, the texture selection. Like, this is a... It's called cobblestone. It's the texture of the glass for the book.
Okay.
But I chose it because I thought it might give the feeling of like it was bound in some kind of leather or something, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah.
There aren't unlimited textures, but I can do things to make it better or whatever.
Tell me about this skull here, because there's basically like a mirror.
Yeah, you
under
can,
it. Is that is
well,
that normally would that be transparent if that were up against a window?
No, actually it's not. It's that's an opaque iridescent glass. So because the glass is black, it has a mirror effect, and it's rainbow iridescent. You can get them in different colors that are translucent,
okay.
And so when it's illuminated, it will be blue, and you'll see the iridescence, but black has the strongest mirror effect. It isn't technically a mirror, though. I have mirror glass, but...
The best mirrors are black. Gonna start a okay, so before I turn this thing up, is there anything like you want to like tell people who would be listening to this on the radio or later in a podcast that could be listened to basically forever until the end of time or until the internet is gone?
No pressure. I don't know. I love the history of it. I love being involved, more and more involved in the community here. Like, I think we have a great community in Brooklyn, and I don't know, I just want my life to be like old books and secrets and personal rituals.
That is solid gold. I'm so glad that's like the end of this. Okay, cool.
So big thanks to Riven Barrow Glass for talking to me. You can follow them on Instagram. You can buy pieces on Etsy. I highly recommend you do. And while you're in the market for something along those lines, I'd also recommend that you check out, we're doing a Patreon page here at Radio Free Brooklyn because we are a free service and none of us who work here are getting paid to do this, but it's a platform that's available. It's a unique platform for shows like this one that you really couldn't do on mainstream radio because sometimes society just isn't ready yet to talk about witches during the drive time commute. And you can contribute to us at www.radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. You can even sponsor this show specifically if you want to. I wouldn't stop you. Well, no, why would I? That's crazy. Incidentally, it occurred to me while I was re-listening to that just now to look up exactly how Dale Chihuly lost his eye. And it's funny because... It both was and was not a glass-related accident. Apparently, 1976, glass artist Dale Chihuly was in a car accident and he went through the windshield, and the windshield glass is what caused him to lose his eye. but he kept making blown glass sculptures after that. And that's sort of a good lesson for all of us. A lot of things, we're going to run into a lot of problems in our lives. But you got to keep going. And that's true for terrible accidents and also just for trying to develop your magical abilities, your magical powers. So, thank you so much for being with us today. And be sure to check out our offerings that are coming up soon. That's next month's episode. On August 14th, we'll be talking to somebody about sex magic and how you can make that a big part of your life. And later we'll be talking to someone from the Wiccan Temple here in New York City. And make sure to keep sending in your questions. I know we've got a backlog, but keep sending them, because you will get an answer either way, either from me through the internet or from me through this radio show, which is also on the internet. You're going to get answers through the internet either way. And the email to send those questions to is intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. That's into the dark, R as in radio, F as in free, B as in Brooklyn, because you're listening to Into the Dark right now on Radio Free Brooklyn, @gmail.com. Or you can Twitter at me if you want. I will respond to that. I just flipped the switch that says open direct messages, so I don't even need to follow you, and you can tell me all sorts of great things. And since I pulled a little bit from chaos magic today, I'd like to close the show with a thought from Peter Carroll's Guide to Chaos Magic, Lieber Null. And in that, see, Lieber Null makes a big point about the importance of laughter in your life, that laughter is one of the strongest things in fighting for good or for evil or against either. It's fine, because laughter has no inverse. And he argues, laughter. So he does argue that crying is a kind of laughter, but that laughter is the only tenable position in a universe which is a joke played on itself. I don't know if that's true or not. It makes me feel warm inside, though, and I hope it makes you feel warm too. Thanks for listening to us today. Stick around for the next show. We'll see you next month on Into the Dark.